Ba 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 Hip in the lip. Ba 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 ba. Hip in the lip. Good evening from unknown parts of metropolitan New York City. I am the hip, and this is the lip.
Hello, Hip and Lip Nation, on this Sunday evening, the first day of spring, I believe, is it not? Even though
Indeed,
we are.
March 20. Yes, indeed it is, sir. Episode 13 of Hip in the Lip. I can't believe we've made it this far.
Wow,
Thanks to
13.
all of you for enjoying this, what our listeners would probably say, tumultuous ride. But it's been all fun and exciting, and it is your New York Islanders podcast, yes. And so tonight we throw perhaps a deke at our listeners.
I like that. It's a good hockey term.
Yeah,
That's a
I
good
was gonna say
hockey
curveball, but that would
metaphor.
a deke would a curveball would you know what that meant, but that wouldn't fit the context here. So we're gonna deviate from our typical format and have an abbreviated version of the recap of in this case the last four games. Plenty of juicy stuff to discuss within those four games, there's no question.
Oh yeah, very juicy.
So we'll get into those games, and then we're going to have a very special guest. Rob from Road Ice Travels is going to join the podcast. This is a real person who has actually agreed to come on and talk about the Islanders with us. At least he's agreed to do it. He could always drop out between now and then, so we'll see if he can survive listening to us for this long.
Well, I guess we'll have our answer. We get dead air after about 20 minutes or so. Hello, hello. We'll just talk about the technical difficulties.
Oh well, losing listeners faster than we're gaining them, always good. So that's what we have lined up tonight. Very exciting, and so as usual, we'll kick off with a very brief standings update. So it's the landscape has changed very quickly from 1 week ago, our last show, where the Islanders now, through today's games, are in fourth place in the Metropolitan Division with 85 points, 70 games played. And ahead of them now are your Pittsburgh Penguins by 3 points at 88 points, 72 games played, as well as the New York Rangers. Identical, 88 points, 72 games played, and in fact, they have identical records. Pittsburgh and New York at 40, 24, and 8. So now the Islanders are 3 points behind both the Rangers and the Penguins. Quick change here from a week ago, and of course Washington above and beyond. But now Philadelphia is only 5 points behind the Islanders, and so this obviously a tumultuous week to get to this point. So without further ado, let's get right into it. And it started on a high note with their last, not last minute, but what, last 5 minute crazy comeback victory at home against the Panthers, which I thought set up the week well. And in fact, the Lip was in attendance for this one. So, why don't you give us the Barclays Center experience and evaluation of the Islanders' win here?
Well, the Lip was in attendance, so he got to see firsthand just that absolutely phenomenal performance by the Islanders for the first 40 minutes of that game. A game, of course, as you pointed out, they would come back to win. It was a frenetic comeback orchestrated by the Islanders. They were down 2-0 in the third period, and they were able to score three goals in the final 7 minutes and 10 seconds to win, which is the first time actually since 1991 that they won a game in regulation where they were down by 2 goals, or overcame a 2-goal deficit, and at least in the final 7 minutes and 10 seconds of the game. But for the first 40 minutes, let me just say that their play was it was basically non-existent. I mean, it may as well have been a figure skating exhibition perpetrated by the New York Islanders. It was a game where that nobody showed up for the first 40 minutes, and this will be obviously a theme as we get into the other games. But the first 40 minutes was basically vomit-inducing. I mean, it was you're sitting there watching this, and you saw just guys that were completely disinterested, guys that looked like they were just completely going through the motions. A power play which it was comical that they would even call that a power play because Florida had the best chance. This was, I think, in the second period. I think they had the puck in the offensive zone for like 3 seconds out of the 2 minutes. It was absolutely just wretched hockey for the first 40 minutes, and then for the last 20, they picked up their play, and then, of course, were able to come back and get the victory. The game-winning goal by Cal Clutterbuck, and another game-winning goal by Cal Clutterbuck, who continues to be one of their best players, one of their best forwards, really, throughout the course of the entire season. And they are now 11-0 when I should call him Clutter Duck Butter for our audience, when he scores a goal. But when I left the arena after that game, and I got to say, the Barclays Center was electric. The atmosphere, I've been to a handful of games this year. I have not heard the Barclays Center that loud in any of the games I have been to. And some of the comments I saw after the game was that it was the loudest that it had been, maybe other than one of the Ranger games, all season. That's how loud the crowd was when the Islanders tied it, and then, of course, would take the lead late on the Clutterbuck goal. And I'm sitting there, and I'm walking out of the arena after the game is over, and I'm thinking to myself, could this be a turning point? Will they turn what should have been a terrible, awful 2-0 loss or just a loss and, you make this great comeback? Could this be a turning point where they flip a switch and now they're going to go, kind of go on a roll and to finish out the season? Well, hold your horses. But at least for this game, they were able to get the win. It was a very exciting finish, but as we will get into in just a moment, did not lead to anything positive over the next few games for them.
But I don't understand, I watched this game start to finish, and I just don't get how a team could look so bad in two periods, and then it's like they're like new human beings wearing the previous players' jerseys that come on for the third period because they look completely different. Can the coach actually say something that, did they change lines? Like, what is it that caused the team to like look so different? I can understand one night to the next, fine, okay, but period to period, looking so differently? Are they coached? Are they instructed to do something differently? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
I've said this before. Hockey is a game of ebbs and flows, and for them, that the first goal was scored by Kyle Okposo. It was a an innocent-looking play. He was able to gain the zone and wristed a shot past Roberto Luongo, who was clearly screened on the play. Didn't react to the puck. Didn't react to the shot off of Okposo's stick. And then really after that, the Islanders just finally, and they had been playing better in that period leading up to that, but all of a sudden now they're skating, they're energized by the crowd, the crowd's now into it, they're skating, and they actually got a little maybe overzealous. I forget if it was after, it may have been after the tying goal, actually, after Josh Bailey was able to put a rebound. It seemed like it took him an eternity to put that puck in that wide-open net to tie the game there, but they may have gotten overzealous after they tie the game on that Josh Bailey goal as Florida comes back with an on-man rush, and Thomas Greiss makes a tremendous save there to keep the score tied at 2, and then, of course, Clutterbuck would score off that ridiculous angle, and I was trying to figure out how that puck went in. I think it went off of Luongo's stick and in. Yeah. I honestly can't answer that question, and it's a question that begs to be asked. It's really one of the themes of the season. We've talked about, Jekyll and Hyde, or as Butchie says, Heckle and Jekyll, as his team just goes through stretches where they look good, and then they go through stretches where they look awful. And it has just been the case with this team from start to finish, all season long. And if you want to know my honest opinion, again, they have to fire the coach. I think that's the only way that you can stop this, because they are not going to win a damn thing by playing this style of hockey, because now you saw what happens when you play good teams. When you play bad teams, on their 6-1 road trip, you can get away with playing, for 7 and 8 minute stretches in a 60-minute game and come away with a win. When you play good teams, you lose, and that's exactly what happened after that Florida game.
Right. So and by the way, I just want to throw in there. Last show I pushed you on telling us who you would start in net against the Panthers and then the Penguins, because they were back to back. We knew that it would be Greiss, Berube, or vice versa. And you said you would use Berube against the Panthers and then Greiss against at Pittsburgh because it's the, you know, the team on your tail at that point. And of course, Greiss gets the start against the Panthers, and then Berube's in net against the Penguins, a game that the Islanders lose in a shootout, 2-1. And just speaking of Berube, I mean, he passed the eye test for me in this game, in overtime in particular.
Oh,
he looked unbelievable, actually.
Oh, it was perfect, yeah.
For a guy that hadn't started since, I don't know, early February, this is the first game he's played since Halak went down, and he hadn't played a while prior to that. He looked great, but you tell us about the rest of the team's performance in this one.
Well, I will say, and I thought that they played okay in this game. You know, you're always going to seem to excuse a team on the second of a back-to-back. You know, one of the terms that you'll see in Islander mania used often is scheduled loss. You know, and I think it's meant to be a kind of a and, you know, it's like used like in a mocking type of way. It's, you know, meant to be a like a derogatory term. You know, to describe, you know, how like teams will come out and they'll look terrible after on the second of a back-to-back, and you go, oh, they were going to lose this game anyway.
Yeah, but against the team that's right behind you in the standings with like 15 games to go in the season, I can't buy that. I'm sorry. There's so few games.
No, I'm not excusing anything. I said, I thought that they were okay in this game. I thought that they at least, you know, they seemed to, you know, they seem to put forth, you know, for the most part, you know, a decent effort. You know, it was clear that they didn't really have their legs under them. Pittsburgh had to jump on them for a majority of the game. They were able to tie the game late. Oposo was able to score a power play goal. Nice goal by Oposo. I'll give him that. You know, I've been hard on him, of course, as you know. But a nice goal there by Oposo on the power play to tie it. And then, you know, of course, the overtime in which, you know, they might as well have just been playing 3-on-0 the entire overtime, Pittsburgh, as Berube, you know, was basically asked just to stand on his head. I mean, he almost had to literally stand on his head to try and stop some of those Pittsburgh chances. But they were able to withstand the Pittsburgh barrage and come away at least with a shootout opportunity, which they would go on to lose. The skills competition is how he always puts it. And, you know, of course, Jack after the game, and I mean, we're going to get to Jack in a moment, but Jack was very quick to compliment the team and you know, pat themselves on the back for this moral victory for putting forth a decent effort against a good team, a hot team, on the second of a back-to-back. And we'll get to Jack. But overall, you know, you say, okay, you know, you get a point. You do lose a point in the standings of Pittsburgh, but it's only the one that you lose. You move on, and hopefully you come away with a couple of good efforts on the road. Well,
well, then they travel to Nashville. They have a game. They have one day off. They played. They played Nashville last Thursday, and well, I think you already, you know, kind of spilled the beans. 4-2 loss in this one.
Yeah, and our guest will touch on this as he was in attendance for this game. But another awful start, and Howie actually has pointed this out now in multiple games, how this team just seems to consistently, one thing at least they're consistent with is their awful starts, and no exception in this game, another terrible start. I think they were outshot like, you know, maybe, what was it, 40-3 in the first period or something, at least it felt like that. You know, Nashville would get the first goal in this game. I think that was 5 straight games now, at least after the Dallas game, that the Islanders had given up the first goal. You know, they would tie the game on the first NHL goal from Ryan Pulock, so congratulations to him, and for his efforts he was shown the press box against Dallas, but we'll get into that. But he gets his first NHL goal. It was on, I guess ironically, a wrist shot as opposed to, you know, his big blast that he features, that big slap shot or his ability to one-time a puck from the point. A screenshot in front, so congratulations to Ryan on his first goal. Howie actually made an interesting comment that the Islanders, you know, for a majority of the first two periods, spent the entire time in their zone, and Howie actually made a nice little quip where he said the Islanders should have their mail forwarded to the defensive zone, and, you know, he comes up with good ones like that. So well done, Howie. But immediately after that first goal was scored, you'd think maybe the team's going to get energized now, you tie the game. Nope. Instead, Nashville jumps on them, scores 2 goals in the blink of an eye. They were able to score quickly, and then on a power play after they, you know, the Islanders take a penalty after Nashville makes it 2-1, And then, you know, just a, you know, basically game over, good night, the light at 3-1. And I know that they would make it 3-2 in the third period, but I never thought the Islanders were going to come back in a 2-goal deficit. And they would go on to a 4-2 loss, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and this is kind of answering my question or point from last show. You know, we're talking about coaching and preparing for teams, and you know how could a team come out and score and look so great like they did against the Rangers when they scored 3 goals in what, the first 5 minutes or whatever, just blazing on the ice, and then you know days later just look so flat and horrible. And you know we're talking about how it's coaching and game planning, and I said, look, Jack has his game planning cut out for him this week with these 4 games, 3 on the road, all playoff contenders, some at the top of divisions, and clearly he has gotten a big fat F. There's no question. I mean, the Islanders have to consider themselves lucky for coming back against Florida with such little time left. And what another funny point just about that, you know, last year that would have been the opposite situation, right, where the Islanders would be giving up a 2-0 goal lead with 7 minutes to go, and it's just funny that they've kind of turned the tides on that. But that's only a little positive comment there.
There's a silver lining, right? At least they're
right,
not blowing
exactly.
3-goal leads regularly anymore, right? Hey, yeah. Well, they don't have 3-goal leads to blow anymore now.
Well, not this week, where they, you know, they picked up 1 goal against Pittsburgh, and then you know, they had 2 against Nashville. And then, you know, limping into Dallas 2 days later last night, and here they can't even score a goal. So I think you could take a wild guess of how this one ended up with Brian, with your best friend, Brian Strait, in the game. I guess, was Pulak a scratch for this one?
Of course. Oh, absolutely. Scored his first NHL goal. Hey, great job, kid. Now, you know, get in the press box.
Now, I think
the wonderful
sat.
Brian Strait back in the lineup because, you know.
I believe he did also sit either the game against the Panthers or Penguins. I don't remember which one, but that I can understand because it's back-to-backs perhaps. But here, they had a day off in between. I mean, what is the, is it a matchup?
Jack was quoted as saying that he's a heavier player, whatever that means. I mean, I guess Pulak is like 170 pounds, right? Oh, wait, no, he's actually 215 pounds. So go figure exactly what that means when he said that he should have been, that he was in the lineup because he's a heavy player or plays a heavy game. You know what, Jack? We don't take anything that you say seriously anymore, so just keep it to yourself, because anybody that pays attention to the team knows that you're a buffoon and that you have absolutely no idea how to... You have no idea how to really stop this sinking ship right now, and I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm going to go into my rant here in just a moment. I know we have our guests too, and I want to keep them waiting, but I guess we'll move on with the Dallas game, and then we'll get to my rants. Is that?
I don't think you're supposed to schedule a rant, but I guess you just did. It's just supposed to kind of happen, so.
I mean, I guess, you know, we didn't want to, you know, elongate any of our segments this evening, but yeah.
Then
this
a rant at exactly 10:37 and 42 seconds.
Well, at least I'll get in some choice words for both the GM and the coach, but so the game yesterday, you know, a shutout loss, you know, they play a little bit better, I guess. I mean, they came out better in the first period. Second period was terrible. They were awful in the second period, and then, you know, really, you know, and Dallas was getting a ton of chances. I mean, the second period, they were going back and forth, but Dallas got more of the quality chances. And then on that first goal, which I think you like knew the game was over after they scored that first goal, just how futile the Islanders' offense has been. But terrible. But Calvin DeHaan, who struggled since he's come back, you know, and I give, you know, a lot of crap to Strait, who stinks, who had a terrible game against Dallas. But Calvin DeHaan has had a couple really rough games. He had a terrible play against Nashville. You took a wrong angle on a goal that Nashville scored. It was, I think, with their third goal or whatever. And in this game, he had terrible awareness in the offensive zone along the boards. Dallas was able to chip it ahead. I think it was Eakins for Dallas that was able to get on a 2-on-1 with Jamie Benn, one of the top goal scorers in the league. So Travis Hamonic is defending on the play. He takes away the pass to Benn, naturally. And he was able, and then Eakins was able to wrist it past Thomas Greiss, but a terrible play there by DeHaan. And then they would, of course, score the second goal. And I mean, if you didn't think the game was over at 1-0, at 2-0, you knew they were done. As Franz Nielsen, who's also been terrible as of late, coughed up the puck at the Dallas blue line. And then you just see Letty, Oposo, and Bailey all kind of mosey on back as they watch. I think Patrick Eves, who scored the goal, he gets stopped by Thomas Greiss on his initial attempt on the breakaway, and then was able to put in the rebound over a sprawling and supine Thomas Greiss, who I'm sure was thinking to himself, like, where the hell are my teammates right now? As you just see, you know, Letty and Oposo and Bailey, you know, just they're moseying on back. Let's give the illusion that we're going to try and get back and maybe defend, considering that there was a rebound opportunity, and maybe if one of them is skating hard, maybe they can actually break up the play. But no, let's take our time and get back. Oh, look, there's a rebound. Oh, it's 2-0. Game over. So there you go. Empty net goal with, I think Jack pulled the goalie with, like, what was it, 8 or 9 minutes left or something, or 4 maybe. I forget how much time was left. But Dallas would score the third goal. Game over and road trip over, and just concludes a terrible stretch for the Islanders.
12 games to go in the regular season.
Yep.
Eight are at home, but man, I mean, if this is crunch time, and with such an awful run like this, I mean, I think if we just take guesses of where they're going to end up, it could be anywhere. I mean, they could end up being second in the division somehow. I mean, I'm sure you have all the confidence in the world that they could still.
Or
pull it up and be on their tails, because hey, what do you know?
Hey.
The Islanders play the Flyers tomorrow night, and with if the Flyers take that one, now the Flyers are only 3 points behind the Islanders with 11 to play. So, really, we're really setting an exciting tone here. I mean, it is what it is. This is your New York Islanders, and I think it's a fitting time to share the misery with our fellow guests. So,
all right, let's do it.
Yeah, so we're bringing on Rob from Road Ice Travels, and again, we're going to get into all the ups and downs of the Islanders and Road Ice Travel. So, Rob, how are you tonight?
I'm good, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, tell us just a little bit about yourself, you know, where you're from and when you first took interest in the Islanders.
Sure. Grew up in Wantagh, about 10 minutes from the Coliseum. Been rooting for the Islanders ever since I bought the first NHL video game for Super Nintendo, I think it was, and going to games ever since. And, you know, disappointed that they moved away from there, but, you know, still going to be a fan, of course.
And so you're making regular trips from so you live in Long Island now and you make trips to Barclays on a regular basis?
So I actually live in Queens now. And I have not made regular trips to the Barclays. It's still not as easy as one would think. It's still a decent subway ride. But I've made it there a couple of times so far.
You'd think that if you're in Queens and you need to get to Barclays Center, it would not take, you know, six trains and over an hour, but I'm finding, you know, you're far from alone in that regard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so tell us about Road Ice Travels.
Sure, so it started 3 years ago. We came up with the idea. I had gone on a New York Giants football road trip to Dallas with some friends, and we're Googling, you know, where to stay, how to get there, what are we going to do? We don't know where anything is in relation to anything in Dallas. And then we looked around a little more, and we found that there's a group that has actually two companies that do these road trips for Giant games. And we ended up joining them, and it was a couple of hundred Giant fans traveling to Dallas. It was actually Hurricane Sandy weekend, and we got stranded down there for a few extra days. But then we just had the idea, you know, there's a niche of diehard hockey fans out there. And I've been on enough Islander road trips myself and with my friends that we thought it would be a great idea to try and bring as many people as we can on our trips with us.
Cool. So
we've been doing it for 3 years now.
So you must know the opposing, or you're getting to know the opposing cities quite well. You know, you pick a bar to meet up at or some other pregame event, and and you know, run us through like what a typical trip is like.
Sure. So it's basically a round trip bus, and we have a 56-passenger coach bus. It's got a bathroom on board. You know, you can play music. You can bring on whatever you'd like. So it's round trip bus, ticket to the game, sitting in the group of Islander fans. More likely than not, it's on the Islanders attack twice side in the visiting arena. And there's, like you said, there's usually a pregame event beforehand with where we raffle off some stuff. There's drink specials, maybe food specials. We've worked with a Sirius XM radio show called Hockey Unfiltered and Hockey Primetime a few times, so we've coordinated them broadcasting from these visiting bars, and we come in with a group of visiting fans, and you know, there's a nice interaction there. So it's been a lot of fun.
So when was the last trip that you guys had?
So a handful of us just came back from Nashville and from Boston. The bigger road trips were mostly Philly and the Devils this year. You know, a lot of fans seem to like the closer trips or the Saturday afternoons where they don't have to take a day off of work or, you know, book hotel or airfare or anything like that. So the longer trips are a little, you know, less populated, but still a lot of fun.
So you guys took a bus to Nashville?
No, we actually flew down there.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. That would have been quite a ride. Well, I would have said, man, that's over the top dedication.
yeah, that's a little too far than we're willing to travel by bus right now.
Right. Well, you know, maybe if the Islanders win a playoff series, you could double in attendees from one season to the next. You know, I'm wondering. You know, tell me some of your thoughts on that. Like, we've talked a lot on this show about this weird position that ownership is in with the move to Barclays, where, you know, they're trying to obviously keep the passionate, diehard fans that are on Long Island, while at the same time reel in this, you know, the metropolitan New York City area. While the Rangers are here, there's still a lot of, especially in the outer boroughs, a lot of untapped, you know, sports fans who are just not big hockey fans. And so, you know, what has been your impression of how that's played out so far?
Well, yeah, I think exactly. They're trying to reach the new fans in that area, but there's already an established Ranger fan base, maybe even a Devils fan base. So they're relying on the Islander fans to travel from Suffolk, from Nassau, and I think there's a good, you know, good group or so of people that have been doing it consistently. But, you know, a lot of the fans that would go to the Coliseum a dozen times a year are not going anymore, and I don't know if they've found the new fans to take their place at the Barclays, and the you know, the staff at the Barclays and the way they've been conducting business there is not really conducive, so from what I've seen so far, to welcoming in anybody. So, you know, whether it's from their Halak mini helmet fiascos, people not getting bobbleheads, just people being treated poorly by the staff, people not being informed. It could be just a big learning curve, you know, for the first year staff there, but it's not like they haven't had other sporting events there in the past. So
maybe they're busy waxing that car that's like next to, you know, next to the ice down there, and they're so focused on that. Which I don't know if you have the answer to why that's there and the decision behind
not.
That, but it's so ridiculous.
I do not have that answer.
Well, it's their official team mascot. Come on. it's not Sparky anymore. Now it's the SUV at the in the corner over there.
Were we at that game with the Halak mask that we never saw? Was that was the
we were
the Penguins game?
So we didn't
get it.
Nope, we did not. We came outside to see a lot of empty boxes and people that were scrounging through them. You know, like scavengers, just trying to see if they can find one. Apparently, we missed like the mad rush, that whole fiasco.
Well, maybe after they saw that he got injured, they were just, you know, people were just dying to get one, I guess. I don't know.
It's going to be more valuable.
It's kind of ironic timing. That was the game that, you know, for
that's right.
Don't remember. So it turns out the Halak. What was it that they gave out again?
It was a mini helmet, like a ceramic type mini helmet.
So in that game, Halak injures his groin and is now not going to play until the playoffs, at the earliest, if at all. So, go Islanders. you just came back from Nashville. You obviously probably returned with a sour taste in your mouth from that game. What is your, you know, quick assessment of the team to this point this year? You know, if you have a scheduled rant that you'd like to make,
take away from the lips rants. No, I think you guys touched on it a little bit. It's basically pick a name out of a hat to see who's playing defense from one day to the next. There's no consistency. The players aren't comfortable playing with each other, and you could tell. And they're spending the whole shift in the D zone. You got JT and Oposo spending their whole shifts in the defensive zone, not getting any ozone time. So what do you expect? So there's no shots on net. They get tired and they have to come off before they get a chance for a rush. And then as they're going off, there seems to be an odd man rush the last several games. So, you know, Grice and Berube are doing everything they can, literally standing on their heads like the lip said. But, you know, you could see a defensive breakdown, and I think that's the direct cause of no offense at all, because there's just no, you know, tired legs. They got to get off, and then the next shift is spent in the defensive zone as well. And
yeah.
I don't know why, or, you know, and sitting Pulak back-to-back games, the guy's, what, 21 years old? He should be in there every game. I mean, let the kid play. Let everyone that's playing well or was playing well just play, even if they have a bad game or two. I think you need the consistency.
I agree, and you make good points. I mean, a team that has had so many defensive breakdowns over the last however many games, it just seems like, you know, guys are getting open. Franz Nielsen's had his, I mean, he's talked about as one of the great defensive centers in the game, and you've seen him multiple times now just lose his guy. You saw it in the game that you were at in Nashville. I remember in the Boston game, he vacated the front of the net, and Pastrnak, you were at that game, of course, too. Pastrnak was wide open for that, I think it was the second goal of the game for Boston. At the end of the period. So, yeah, it's just been, the defensive breakdowns, you know, they can't get any extended offensive zone time. I don't know about you, but right now I'm concerned with this team because I think they just look very complacent. I mean, how nervous are you right now? I mean, do you think that this team could conceivably end up out of the playoffs, or are you just hoping that they can kind of expect them to get in the playoffs and then right the ship by the time that they do?
Well, I'm also a Mets fan, so of course they can not be in the playoffs come 3 weeks from now, but I think they'll hang on to a playoff spot somehow. They'll have to win a couple more games, I would hope. So, but they got to get it together quick, and I have some info that there's a rival Philadelphia group bringing a couple of buses of fans up tomorrow, so hopefully the Islander fans show up and quiet those folks down a little bit, and we can get a nice win.
Oh, man, that would be great to get them to shut up, because, look, a win for them, oh, my gosh, they're gonna be so excited, and they're you would think that their playoff hopes kind of hinge on this game.
Yeah, I thought they were left for dead a couple of weeks ago, and here they are, and it's scary.
One thing you mentioned, Rob, that caught my attention is players not being comfortable playing with each other. So we know that Jack has done some line changes. I notice hearing about it. It's talked about, and it's been done recently. So what's your impression of that? Like, why is it you know, certain guys have been out and they just haven't play. I mean, we know the best line in this team is the fourth line, and they seem to play incredibly well together. But what about these other lines? Like, what's your take on that? Why?
I have no idea why. I just, maybe it's a lack of talent. I mean, well, Anders Lee, you know, he woke up recently, but they were counting on him to be, you know, 25-30 goal scorer. Why wouldn't they think that? So he's done little. He's come on of late, like I said. JT, you know, he's a superstar. He's amazing to watch. His vision on the ice is fantastic. But I don't even think he's in the top 25 in points. I mean, it's not necessarily his fault. But, you know, as far as the other lines, I guess they have to keep juggling people that might be able to play with him. But this late in the season, how do they not know that yet, you know?
Right.
So I think there's a lot of people not pulling their weight. And like I said, you know, there's people not hustling out there. In my own roller hockey league, we yell at each other from the bench. You know, if you're not hustling, get off. And I don't know if they're yelling that to each other there or who's yelling it, but no one's going for the puck. They're not winning any puck battle, not winning any physical battle, except for the fourth line. And they're getting completely dominated, so I'm hoping to see it end tomorrow.
Yeah, and, I mean, for me, I've been very critical of management, particularly, well, the general manager, for his lack of moves since Game 7 last year against Washington. I mean, the only significant move he's made, really, was bringing in Thomas Greiss, who's been terrific. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's been great. But, you know, nothing else. I mean, do you agree with the approach that he has taken? You know, whether it's last summer or at the trade deadline, not making any kind of significant move other than bringing in Shane Prince, who has 1.9 games. I mean, were you comfortable with the way the team was constructed, that they could, you know, just improve their play, you know, towards the end of the season and then go on a run from there? Or did you think that he should have made a move or moves?
No, I think moves should have been made. You know, enough is enough already with rebuilding and prospects and kids. You know, I'm sick of it. What has it gotten us? 20-plus years of not making it out of the first round. I'm sick of it. You could bring in if they had a chance to bring in a rental, I don't know who they could have brought in, but I guess there were a few guys out there. Bring in a rental. I don't even care who it costs anymore, to be honest. The fans want to see something, and I'm hoping they even make it into the first round, and let alone out of it this year, but I definitely wish they made a couple more moves and got somebody with some, you know, skill.
You know, it's amazing how much a week changes things. A week ago, it would have kind of been inconceivable just to say we hope that the Islanders make the first round. But mm-hmm. Here we are, and it's legitimately fair.
Yeah, it's very true. It's scary.
Guess we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I mean, I guess the pessimistic Islander fan in all of us is going to come out, considering, you know, just how inconsistent they've been this year. And you know, well, hopefully they can somehow right the ship here and get back on track, because they're going to have to win some games on the stretch just to make sure that they get in. Do you have any games on tap that you'll be going to at the end of this last stretch of the season?
We don't have any more games planned for this season. You know, we had hoped to do some viewing parties this season. Should the Islanders hold on and make the playoffs, we're hoping to do a couple of viewing parties for some of the road games and maybe have some giveaways and stuff. Next year, we look to have another full schedule of road games and some viewing parties and some other stuff in the works. But as of now, we're done for this season.
So is road ice travels, is it specifically for the Islanders?
It is. There's a couple of other games that have been mixed in there just based on scheduling and demand. But it's become basically just an Islanders road, you know, road travel group. And, you know, we get some other unique perks that you couldn't get on your own if you just drive down with your buddies to, like, Philly or to the Devils game. You know, we get on the ice after the game for, you know, group photos on the Devils ice, for example. Another Devil game this year, we all got to take shots from the blue line. They gave us sticks on the ice after the game, so, you know, it's nice photo ops and fun chances for people to do that. In Philly, we raffled off two spots to sit in the penalty box before the game, so two people got to watch warm-ups from the penalty box, which is awesome. We only ask that they take a lot of photos and video for us for our website, and they always do. So we have a lot of repeat business and repeat customers telling other friends, so it's grown into something pretty good, and hopefully we can keep growing from here.
Tell your friends!
Exactly.
RoadIceTravels.com.
Yep.
And you guys are on Twitter?
We are on Twitter. We admittedly do need to kick up our social media game a little bit, so next year that's number one on our agenda. We also work with the 516 Alliance group, Islander fan group on Facebook. So I think there's maybe 700 or 800 people in that group that, you know, chat during games, and a lot of them have come on the trips and stuff. So that's been good.
All right, excellent. Well, what else do you want to share about Road Ice Travels? I think it's a pretty good. You gave us a pretty good synopsis, but I don't want to leave anything out.
Yeah. Thank you. Basically. Said it all. It's, you know, everyone, you know, some people are hesitant, or, you know, a lot of people email us, hey, what, you know, what's this about? I'm a little worried. I've never come on this before. You know, I want to travel alone. Is it, you know, what's the deal? And, you know, everyone that ends up coming always has a great time. And most people email us afterwards and tell us how much fun they had. And they always share their photos with us. Everyone makes a lot of new friends. That's kind of the big thing. People make a ton of friends. So we've had a lot of people travel by themselves. And then you kind of look afterwards, and like they have like 5 new Facebook friends, and it's people from the trips, right, and stuff, and that's great. That's basically exactly what we're shooting for, just groups of Islander fans that want to go see the game together and meet each other, and then, you know, they become friends, go to other games together, hopefully with us, you know, or not, you know. But yeah, that's basically
it. I see plenty of pictures here, you know, but I could understand, you know, somebody going by themselves while they'll maybe just have a little pause up front, but
right.
You know, it looks like you guys do a good job of saying, look, here's what we do. It's not just like four people standing in the back corner of a bar. You big crowd. So you must travel well and have a really good time. So I and I'm sure the Lip hope to be a part of a trip in the future.
It does sound great, I will say, despite you know, a couple of the lousy games that you saw recently in Nashville and Boston. But it does sound like a really great, awesome experience and to meet other Islander fans. And, yeah, it sounds really cool.
Yeah, and, like, you know, even a trip that's close by, like the Devils, you know, people can just get there on their own, obviously, and a lot of people tell us that. But, you know, last year we took a group of 102 Islander fans to the Rock, and, you know, we got two busfuls of people, and it's just everyone meeting, like I said before, everyone just meeting new people and traveling together. And, you know, yeah, you have the option to kind of go on your own and do your own thing. Of course you do, but, you know, we feel like it's a lot more fun just, you know, traveling in a group, and especially in a road game that might be, you know, fairly hostile, which none of them really are. You know, you get the occasional jerk that, you know, tries to mouth off, but when you're in a big group, there's never any risk of, you know, there's no danger or anything like
right.
that.
Yeah. So. Well, so let's talk this upcoming week, guys. So we've already touched on the Flyers. Then they host Ottawa on Wednesday, and then travel to the Bay. Saturday. So another loaded week of games. 8 of 12 are at home, and what more can I say than this is truly going to be an intense final stretch.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Are there any players? You know, I like to ask the Lip questions like this. Are there any players in particular, Rob, that you are expecting more of? Based on what you've seen recently, that you really think need to stay. I know you mentioned Andersley, but are there you know, and you mentioned the defense has been awful, but you know, like I'm still, you know, admittedly it's training for me to learn to watch hockey. Like I can't take it all in as it's happening. It's too fast. I do the best I can, but I often find that if I just try to focus on one or two guys in a game, that I can at least learn a lot more about those particular guys instead of just, you know, a sea of the same jersey, because, you know, it's just hard to pick up on the nuances right away. So give me a guy or two that I should have my focus on these next couple games.
Well, again, I think if they can get some offensive zone time, which does start with the defense, you know, hitting a man with a pass out of the zone and skating in, I think if they can feed Brock Nelson in the slot, where he's become pretty lethal when he gets the chance, I think he's someone to watch in the next week or two. And I think Tavares has been trying to do it all himself. When he does get a chance to come into the zone, he's been trying to skate through three guys. Granted, I don't see another white or blue jersey on the screen when he's in the zone, but... I feel like someone has to get in there and give him a chance to get a shot off before his stick is, you know, hit and the puck's taken away. So I think he needs to make his presence known. You know, Brock, you know, everyone. I mean, the way everyone's played recently, everyone's got to play better. Franz Nielsen can do a little bit more, obviously. Bailey, Kuhlman, Grabowski, like, I don't know. Somebody's got to step up and start scoring and throwing their body around a little bit and wake everyone up, and I think we'll be okay.
All right, well, that sets the stage. Thanks for joining us. This has been episode 13 of Hip and the Lip.
Thanks. Thank you guys for having me on. A lot of fun.
All right. Thank you for joining us, Rob.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
Okay. All right, so we'll just say sayonara. Lip, unless you have any final words, I think we've hit it well.
We did. I think, you know, I said I was going to get a rant in, but, you know, I guess at this point it would lose, you know, whatever kind of impact that it would have. I guess what I was going to say, and what I just want to get in just, the last, like, minute or two here is, you just don't want to see them accepting, because, you know, the team just looks like they've gotten very complacent, and they just look like they are almost, like, disinterested out there, and you don't want to And look, they're not going to fire the head coach. I understand they're not going to fire the head coach, even though I still think at this point it should be considered an option because it just seems like the message has gotten lost, and they're just not responding to everything that he's doing. But you just want to see them at least understand that they have to, that they don't have a spot locked up yet, and you want to see that sense of urgency, and you want to see that consistent effort, you know, for a full 60 minutes. And it's not just, you know, we talk about this week and how they've had a couple of bad games, and look, if they have been playing really well, you know, for a very, you know, long stretch, and, you know, they've been playing full 60-minute games, and you say, okay, well, it's a long season, you know, you're going to have stretches, you know, a couple stretches where you're not going to play your best, and you understand that, but this has been going on for too long, and they really need to show that sense of urgency and understand that these games, you know, now going forward are very important in terms of the standings, obviously, and their positioning in the playoffs, and, you know, just making sure that they secure that spot. And you just don't want to see them accepting of this mediocrity. You don't want to see the coach accepting of this mediocrity. And you want to see him, you know, hold players accountable when they're not pulling their weight and when they're not, you know, giving a full effort. And if it means benching players, then so be it. And or, you know, we're just, you know, changing the message in the locker room, or, you know, just, you know, handling the players differently in practice or whatever. Something needs to be done now because this has been going on for too long.
I think the lip is concerned that he will not see an X to the left of the word Islanders by the end of the season, because that's that's the only way that he achieves physical climax. So so he's desperately calling upon for the Islanders to pick up their play, and duly noted.
All right.
So we'll be back in about a week's time. A week from today is Easter Sunday. I don't think we're going to have a show on Easter Sunday. We're shooting for the following day or night. So just about a week's time. Four more games to go. Four more games. So it'll be interesting to see what our tone's going to be in four games. A lot changed from last week, and they're going to play four more games. When we come back, they're going to have eight games left in the season. So this is it. So, yes, on that note, let's go, Islanders. Yes. Will we have something to celebrate? Yes. All right.
Hopefully it is. Yes.
All right. Well, all right. Thanks for listening, and until next time.
Bye.